Flashback Twin Cities on KLDB Club 1220. I am Tom Osmond, and with me always is James. Good morning, James.
Good morning. How are you today?
Great. You know, we were on special assignment last week, and it seems like we've been gone for a month. I came today and had to remember how to do this today.
I know, just a couple of weeks. It seems like way more than that. Well, but I got to sleep in. It was a nice change.
That was nice. That was nice. This hour, again, on Flashback Twin Cities is an hour of history and media and culture of the Twin Cities through some of the people that created these memories and told us these memories. And one memory that always comes back to haunt us every year is the weather. And I think that a lot of us forgot what it's like to live in sub-zero temperatures, even though I think there was a period where we used to do that for a couple months a year, or at least a few.
Oh, yeah. I remember January, I think, a couple of years ago, walk outside, it's negative 17. No big deal.
No, and I think that we've just gotten a little spoiled the last couple of years with no snow and 40-degree Januaries.
Oh, they are nice, though.
But now, tell me, James, you are going swimming on the lake today. Tell me a little bit about what's going on today, this whole polar plunge thing.
Oh, I tell you what, what's going on today is terror. That's what's happening.
Well, I saw the look in your eyes when you came in today.
You said, oh, you're jumping into the water. I said, yep.
So tell us a little bit about the polar plunge and what it is and what KLBB is doing.
Sure. So we're going to be going over to White Bear Lake, and we will be leaping into the very, very cold water for the Special Olympics. We've been doing a little hoping people will donate, been advertising it for a couple of months now, sponsored by River Valley Ford. So great. They got us T-shirts. We'll be in, what color would you say this is, lime green?
I'd say it's lime green. It's the same color as Mountain Dew, so I think it's lime green.
Mountain Dew shirts.
You won't be able to miss them.
No. But we'll be showing up there. Our jumping time is 1 o'clock. So we're going to be going to, I believe it's Jimmy's Food and Drink. I like the name of the place. Jimmy's Food and Drink.
Jimmy's Food and Drink.
And that's where you park, and they do shuttles from there every 15 minutes or so. It's free, but they don't let you go over and actually park at the beach.
That's
where people will be jumping. That's reserved for handicap.
Okay.
So if you want to come out, join us, and really root me on, because goodness, I need a little push.
Well, I'll be out there clapping. I won't be pointing. I'll be clapping today.
And, oh, you can point and laugh.
Well, you know, we'll see how that looks afterward. No, I'll be out there today. I will not be jumping. I will not be in the water, but I'll be outside the water, my parka on, cheering on the KLDB crowd and others that are jumping today for a great cause.
I'll be wearing a giant birthday hat, one of the cones.
You won't.
It's my birthday today too.
Happy birthday.
Thank
and
you.
What a great way to celebrate your birthday. But not only Flashback Twin Cities, but also jumping in. I'm going to ring a thermometer, too. We'll see what the temperature of the water actually is after you jump.
But I also really quickly want to give a shout-out to all the people who donated. It was phenomenal. I think in total, everyone who's in our KLBB group raised about $1,700.
That's fantastic.
For the Special Olympics. So thank you. Thank you very much.
No, great cause. And the best part about donating to this is we get entertainment. We get to see everyone take the plunge. And, you know, that's worth the price right there. No, it's for a great cause. And looking forward to seeing that today.
Oh, and there will be a video. We'll put it on Facebook after we get it taken care of.
And then we'll talk about this 10 years from now on Saturday morning.
And say, why? Why did I do this?
Oh, that and many other things, right? No, this is a great cause. How many conversations this week did you have about weather?
About weather, gosh, probably about a dozen.
That's a pretty good number. I think every 10 minutes someone was talking about weather, and I took a little step back into the flashback machine. And this week, the historic week, the president was inaugurated for a second term, a private ceremony on Sunday, and then the gala on Monday. Did you watch much of the footage? I think there's about 8 hours of footage, I think, from start to finish of the president. Did you watch any of this?
I saw a little bit. I didn't actually watch the inauguration. I tell you what, I've seen more Beyonce than I have seen the inauguration.
It's been a controversy. In 1985, President Reagan was inaugurated for a second term, and in grade school, we watched part of this coverage in school. Many grade school kids were gathered around, I think probably a 16-inch color TV on wheels, and we watched the big deal was the president got out of the car and waved. In 1985, again, the same as this year, the inauguration happened on January 20th on Sunday in a private ceremony, and then the full ceremony on the 21st. And much like this year in 2013, it was sub-zero weather in Minnesota. But a few other things happened at the same time. Not only did the president get inaugurated privately on Sunday, he then went to go toss the coin for Super Bowl 19, where the San Francisco 49ers played the Miami Dolphins. So he got inaugurated and then went over to the Oval Office, and via satellite, he tossed the coin for the Super Bowl. First time that a president had tossed the coin for the Super Bowl. In the same weekend, or same couple days, on January 21st, a charter plane that had been chartered from Nevada to Minneapolis crashed in Las Vegas, and this was, unfortunately, one of the biggest tragedies in Minnesota history. All but one of the 71 on board did perish in this this crash, and this was a Las Vegas charter. So the Super Bowl, the Galaxy Airlines, and the inauguration all happened in the same day. Let's take a little bit of a listen on what the news sounded like this day.
New stories dominate the news this Monday. We will have the details of a plane crash in Reno, Nevada this morning. At least 60 people died. The plane was bound for the Twin Cities. We will talk to families who know their loved ones are safe and to families who can only assume the worst. Stan?
Massive showing today on one of the most important issues of the 1980s. Farmers, thousands and thousands of farmers from all across the state braved the cold today to let the rest of Minnesota know that the family farm is in deep trouble, and that means trouble for the rest of the state. The plane crash, the farm rally, and much more coming up next on Eyewitness News at 6.
So three big events happened this day, and one thing that I find interesting in watching the news coverage, and this is all on tcmedianow.com, if you type in January 21st, 1985. I have both WCCO and KSDP's footage on the website. You package three big stories, the plane crash, Super Bowl, the inauguration, and all contain the same newscast. I don't think in the 24-hour news cycle that these stories would get the short amount of time they got. There would be all-day coverage of, especially the plane crash, would be all-day coverage.
Oh, absolutely.
And the amazing part about watching these broadcasts from 28 years ago is that they were actually able to take things in perspective. They took the plane crash was tragic. They still reported on the daily news and things that mattered. It was not not to say that things that reporting is sensationalized to discuss these things, but there was just a balance of what the news looked like. They were able to go to an inauguration story. Many Minnesotans went to the inauguration at the same point all this was happening. And this last inauguration, it was cold here. It wasn't as cold in D.C. In 1985, it was cold in D.C., so cold they actually had to move the inauguration indoors for the first time. Let's take a listen at what that sounded like in 1985.
For the second time in 2 days, President Reagan took the oath of office. Yesterday, it was a small, semi-private ceremony. Today, it was a festive, colorful ceremony for the public, which included some Minnesotans. However, it wasn't nearly as grand as the planners had hoped. Lindsay Strand standing by live in Washington via our exclusive News Star 5. Lindsay, good evening.
Cindy, good evening once again from a very chilly Washington, D.C., if you can believe it. Everything, as you have learned by now, really was out of kilter here in Washington, D.C., but that is not the thing that had any kind of an impact on people here today or put a damper. The big question from the Minnesotans is what has happened with that tragedy. They're very concerned about that. They have a lot of questions, and that is really the thing that has impacted what is happening here. But as you say, the president has now been sworn in twice in the last 2 days, and still most Minnesotans who came here didn't get a chance to witness what they hope to see.
So you go with your high school band to be one of the few bands to play at the inauguration, and you end up having to watch it on a TV screen in a ballroom because of cold weather. And cold weather in Minnesota and D.C. and a tragic plane crash. Quite an eventful few days 28 years ago.
My goodness.
Well, we are going to talk more about weather today. And a guest which I am looking forward to speaking with here is Dennis Felkin. He was the meteorologist at Channel 5 for 8 years and later at KARE 11. He now works for the National Weather Service in Florida. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with Dennis Felkin on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. I am Tom Osmond. And joining me live from Florida is meteorologist Dennis Falcon, formerly of KSTP and currently the National Weather Service. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Tom.
It's great to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours. How are things up in the cities?
Dennis, they are. My thermometer on the car this morning was one below when I pulled in today. What's the temperature down in down in Miami today?
I really hate to do this to you, but this is one of the reasons we live down here and we put up with the ridiculous heat and humidity in the summer. It's 67 right now with humidity of about 53%. There's not a cloud in the sky, and you know how that goes.
Yeah, I know that goes. We see that in about July. I think that's when we get
right.
There.
Yeah, this is a nice July day down here, yes.
I know you can't see me, but I'm shaking my fist at you.
Yeah, he's shaking his fist. Our producer James is going to be jumping in White Bear Lake today for the Special Olympics. So if you can imagine the air temperature, picture the water temperature, and that's what he's going to be feeling in a few hours today.
Okay. Good luck with that.
Yeah, that's what I said. I'll be out there cheering. Dennis, thanks again for being on our show today. We want to talk a little bit about when you first came to town. So you were born in Chicago and grew up in Florida. What brought you to Minnesota? It's a warm state with lots of great weather and green. What brought you to Minnesota?
Well, at the time, before I came to the cities, I was doing nighttime weather Monday through Friday at a small ABC affiliate station in West Palm Beach, and I had only been there a couple of months. And out of the blue, I get this call from the general manager, Ralph Dolan, at KSTP, and they said they were looking for somebody to do their weathercast prime time because Dr. Walt Lyons had fled the cities and gone on to greener pastures in Chicago. And I was really hesitant to send a tape and everything. I thought, I just came to Florida. And he pestered me for several weeks. So I sent him a tape. And now we're getting into November, and he calls him couple of days before Thanksgiving and says, hey, we need you to come up here and talk to you about this position. And I was still dragging my heels. Thought, well, what the heck? My wife was out of town for the weekend because I had to work Thanksgiving Day. So I said, okay, tell you what, I'll come up on Saturday and we'll talk. I'd never really seen snow, so I thought, okay, fine.
Have you ever been in Minnesota? I know you're from Chicago.
I had never been in Minnesota, so I thought, hey, this is a great opportunity. I got nothing to do this weekend. What the heck? So that's how I actually came up there to do that. And I met with Stanley Hubbard, and we went out to lunch, and he drove me all around town and everything. And then he took me into the KSTP Weather War Room. And that big clunk you might have heard in late 77, that was my jaw hitting the floor when I saw that operation. I had heard about it through the industry, but you had to see it to believe it. Unbelievable.
And explain about that. I mean, in most stations at the time were getting their weather from the National Weather Service probably. They weren't actually doing any forecasting in studio, correct?
Well, there were a number of TV stations in the 70s that had meteorologists on staff.
True.
And there were a number of TV stations which were doing their own weather forecasts, but the common denominator was everybody's using National Weather Service data, how they interpreted that data.
Right.
But there were still a lot of TV stations, and even in the cities, that were basically rip and read. Here's the Weather Service forecast, and here I am, and we'll do it. But KSTP was unique in that it was doing its own weather map analysis. It had its own radar. It had its own laser fax satellite imagery coming in. It was very impressive, and not to mention the large staff that it had at the time.
And the staff that you were working with on that station at West Palm Beach, was it how many people were on staff?
It was me, and I had a freelancer whose full-time job during the week was a radio announcer in Fort Lauderdale, and he would show up on the weekends and do the nighttime weather on the weekends. So that was it.
So you're in Minnesota, and you actually see people doing weather at a TV station. That's got to be an exciting thing for someone with a weather passion.
Right, it sure was. And even so, with the whole operation there, I was still really hesitant to take the position. I ended up going upstairs with Stanley Hubbard and then Stan Turner, who was the news director at the time. And backstory on that is I wasn't making a whole lot of money in West Palm Beach, let's put it that way. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm really nervous about coming up to the Twin Cities. So I thought, I'm just going to put this out of reach. So Stanley looks at me and says, so how much money is it going to take for you to come up here?
That is a fantastic question.
Okay, I'm going to be a smart aleck here. And I looked at him and I said, I'm not coming up here for less than $20,000 a year. And he looked at me and looked over at Stan Turner and looked back at me and goes, my God, I've got to pay you more than that. At that point, I knew I was done. I was coming to the Twin Cities, and Tom, it was one of the best personal and professional decisions I ever made.
Well, not to get too personal, but you go home, your wife's out of town, and then she comes back and say, hey, by the way, we're going to move to where it's really cold.
Yeah, I mean, she was already aware that I was being flown up. So a couple weeks later, she and I were both flown up to the cities, and so she got to look around because we had to go find a place to live. And so she fell in love with it, too, so that wasn't an issue.
Well, and let's want to take a step into context here. Again, my guest is Dennis Felkin. At the time, there were staff meteorologists in TV stations, but it was still a relatively new thing, and even the Twin Cities. Dr. Lyons was the first actual on-air meteorologist in the Twin Cities, and you were replacing the first on-air meteorologist. Channel 4 had one, and we did have wonderful weathermen or weather readers in the Twin Cities, but it changed in the 70s where the science and personality were merging, and you actually weather wasn't just people that did science in a lab, you know, in a science room, and broadcasters just to broadcasting. Now we actually had weather people that were doing broadcasting. And people with degrees or doctorates, as Dr. Lyons. And you came to a station which was, at the time, number one in the ratings, record ratings.
Oh, yeah. The numbers for that station were legendary. They would have 50 and 60 shares. And one of the things which I still remember, the 10 o'clock edition of Eyewitness News on Sunday night was the most watched television program in all of the Twin Cities, not just news, but all the programs, prime time, anytime. That was the most watched program. So during ratings, the Monday through Friday folks worked Sunday nights for that very reason.
Was this a little overwhelming originally, or what? How did you embrace all that?
It wasn't overwhelming to me at all. What I wanted to do was I needed to put my own mark on the weathercasting really, really quick. And one of the first things that I wanted to do was that the way the forecast was displayed. Walt had this little cubicle that he used to write the forecast on.
Right.
And then he would spin the little cube. And I thought, well, that's okay, but it's very 60s. So what I wanted to do was take advantage of the newly emerging technology, the Chiron, the character generator. And that way we got the forecast displayed up there. And the feedback that I got from the public was immediate. They really liked it because it was up there for X amount of seconds, certainly a lot longer than the cube. And they didn't have to deal with my left-handed weird writing that I never really perfected. So it worked out really well. But I did want to put my own mark on there. I picked up on Walt's little educational features and took them to the next level, whereas the newscast, my weathercast, always had something in that that you might learn. I always wanted the viewer walking away I know the weather, but hey, he talked about this. I didn't know that type thing. I always wanted them to walk away with something that they didn't know before.
No, that's great. And the best part of it is that the weather forecast actually was about 5 or 6 minutes also. We've talked offline that they don't show the maps too much on weather forecast today. We don't really learn a lot about why the weather's happening. We learn about what the temperature is and the misery factor, but not a lot about why we're miserable sometimes.
No, and I got to be honest, Tom, that really bothers me. It bothers me a lot. I come up and visit the cities every once in a while, and of course, you know, I'm going to look at everybody there. And the one running theme is that nobody shows a weather map anymore. It starts out with a whole lot of temperatures in the five-state area. Here it is now. Here's the wind chill. Here's the lows tonight. Here's the high tomorrow. They'll show a radar, they'll show a satellite imagery, and then all of a sudden this computer animation comes in for the five-state area of how clouds and rain are going to do that, are going to change, and then they go to the forecast. It's like, okay, why is all this happening?
Well, I always enjoy,
and I think the viewer's getting shortchanged on that.
No, I agree, and I always enjoyed the education. In fact, let's play a clip of a little education you're providing the audience here.
For as long as the embargo lasts, it'd be big trouble down
there. Yeah, very cold. It's gotten a little bit warmer down there.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, overall down there, they're probably average out with a warmer than normal winter.
Really?
It's funny what you can do with averages. I'll give you an example here. You take a glass of ice and pour that in here. You take hot water, pour that in here. You mix it all up, and that comes out to be normal water. No problem at all. You can make statistics say anything you want. Now, look at the departure from normal for our temperatures for the month of January. Now, we've had our ups. We've had our downs, we've had our ups, lots of ups.
Through a few tumblers and water, Dennis, he taught us about averages.
That's right. Amazing what you can do with the simplest of things.
I want to talk a little bit about the Doppler radar. One of the best stories that you talk about, and it's actually on the video interview on tcmedianow.com, is when Stanley E. Hubbard brought you up to the office and showed you a magazine with this Doppler radar.
Yes.
Tell me a little about that story.
And that was actually before my time there. That was John Dooley, Doppler Dooley, as we nicknamed him, got summoned up to S.E. Hubbard's office, and S.E. Hubbard's got this National Enquirer newspaper, quality journalism there, as we all know, and they were talking about this radar, and Stanley's looking at John saying, we got to get this. And John says, sir, it's just on the drawing board yet. Well, when it's available, we're going to get it. And by golly, he and his son, Stanley Hubbard, Stanley S. Hubbard, were true to their word, and we got from Enterprise Radar the first commercial Doppler radar for television in the world, serial number one.
Wow.
And that was a big deal.
Now, I'm trying to picture, when I get a new TV or I get a new computer, I'm with the instruction manual trying to find instructions online on how to put it up. How did you guys, when you have the first Doppler radar in the world, now, I'm picturing the instruction manual that might have been a little thick.
Well, fortunately, John Dooley had a master's in physics, so that helped a lot. But the good folks at Enterprise Electronics, which is where the radar is made, that's Enterprise, Alabama, by the way, brought it up. And one of the first things we had to do, we had to enlarge the size of the dish inside the radar dome. We had an 8-foot dish, but that had to be expanded to a 12-foot dish to accommodate the radar signal. And that was Gene Rubin's job to work with that. And Gene Rubin was actually up inside the tower when all of that was getting installed. And one afternoon when he was still up in the tower coordinating stuff, we had the squalling coming at us, and we were screaming at Gene to get the heck out of the tower before he gets blown down. But Gene took care of the electronics, and John actually learned how to use the Doppler radar first. And he was trained by Enterprise Electronics to do it. The problem that we had, Tom, was that it was pretty new, and when we're looking at stuff, we really, quote, weren't quite sure what we were looking at because it was all new to us. And a couple of weeks after we had received the Doppler radar was the Roseville tornado event.
A great story.
81.
A great story.
Yeah.
Which, if I have it correctly, it blew right over KSUP studios.
It was, fortunately the tornado wasn't over us, but we could see it. John and Gene Rubin could see it. Looking out the north side of the windows from the war room, they could actually see the funnel. But John was looking at the radar when the signal was down there in Edina, and he wasn't quite sure what he was looking at. He saw the signature, but he ran to the roof and looked south and could see the funnel. And then that's when he called down and says, we've got one. So the radar did its job. It certainly saw it.
And then if all else fails, the roof and looking at the sky also will do the same trick sometimes.
Yeah, well, you know, it never hurts to have a window.
I want to actually, and by the way, KSP promoted Doppler radar very heavily in the 1980s, and I want to play just a short promo promoting Doppler.
Okay.
KSTP Weather Services has Super Doppler Weather Radar, and Super Doppler Radar is your best defense against severe weather. Channel 5 viewers are alerted faster and more thoroughly than by any other television station.
A possible tornado has been indicated.
Thanks to this country's most advanced Super Doppler Weather System.
Remember, KSTP's Doppler Radar System is the most accurate and powerful Doppler radar in the Twin Cities. It helps us warn you before the severe winds have a chance to strike.
KSTP's Super Doppler Radar is your best defense against severe weather.
The best defense against weather
KSTP TV,
St.
Paul, Minneapolis, Channel 5.
I'm pretty excited about it now. This new radar is going to be great.
Talk about some of those. Oh, go ahead, Dennis.
What I was going to say was, you know, they spent a lot of money on that thing, and they were certainly right to promote it. At the time, the National Weather Service did not have a Doppler radar, nor would they until the early to mid-90s when the 88D was installed nationwide.
Talk about some of those memorable storms. You come to Minnesota, you're used to the hurricane season, you're used to the tropical storms, but now you're in Minnesota. Tornadoes and blizzards. Describe some of those early or some of those more memorable storms to me.
Well, when I came to the Twin Cities, I came in the middle of winter, so I had left literally 80-degree air and got dropped into near 0 degrees. I was prepared for it being cold, obviously. What I wasn't personally prepared for, was the duration of the winter. My gosh, by late March and early April, I was climbing the walls. Doesn't it ever get green here? Doesn't this snow ever disappear? It's Easter. What's going on here? I had to get used to that.
Many of us lived here our whole lives. We still have the same question every February and March. The snow will melt, and then a week later we have a blizzard. So we ask ourselves the same question, whether you were here for a year or for 30 years.
Right, and I'd always heard of it's tournament time, so you're going to get the tournament blizzard in March. And and sure enough, in March, you know, you get the heavy snows. That particular year, my first year there, which was 1978, we had a really cold, wet, miserable May. And I remember Stanley Hubbard himself calling down to me, and this was Memorial Day weekend, actually complaining to me, when are we going to get out of this? When are we going to get out of this? It's like, dude, I'm in sales, not production here. What are we going to do here? Come on. You know, I'm climbing the walls like everybody else. And we had snowflakes on Memorial Day weekend, and that was a bit much.
Did you ever find people vented their frustration toward you? You're at the grocery store, you're at the park, you're with your kids, and people said, you know, what are you doing? What's the deal with the weather? And taking their anger out toward you.
Why are you making this happen?
Oh, I know. That was one thing which was very different than the weather than I did in the South. In the South, you know, you could go through life pretty anonymously. But in the Twin Cities, the weathercaster was treated as if he or she was one of the family. They invited you into their living room and you talked to them every night, so it became a part of their routine. And I realized that very quickly. If I was trying to go to Menards or trying to go to the hardware store, grocery store, anywhere I went, I was stopped. And I wasn't quite used to that. In fact, I realized that very early when I went. I wasn't even on the air yet, and KSTP was running a promotional campaign on me. And we had just moved up there, and we were grocery shopping at a Byerly's. In Edina, and they said all I had was, you know, a check. It was a local check, but I was going to write for a check. And they said, well, okay, we need some ID. So I didn't have a Minnesota driver's license yet. So they looked at the Florida driver's license. Oh, you're Dennis Felkin. Oh, we know who you are. Go ahead.